You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Today's show is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire, and you can try it for free by visiting ziprecruiter.com/breakitdown. Welcome back to the show, Downers. I have the privilege of doing the intro for the podcast in the back of my tour bus on tour. Emery's in Orlando tonight, and we just got off stage. So I'm standing in the back of the bus right by the bathroom talking into a microphone. I'm about to upload a podcast. I wanted to get one out to you guys, even though I was on the road this week. And I had a pretty neat opportunity I thought you might like, and that is just to kind of hang out with us on the bus. Now, we're out on the road right now with As Cities Burn, and so I thought it, the fun thing to do would be put as many microphones as I could into my portable H6 recorder, which is six. So I got six mics and got most of the guys from ACB and a couple of Emory guys to sit down, and we just hung out and hit record for a while. We talked about the music business and old shows and big shows and little shows and what all that's like. A lot of fun stuff in there, and I think it was a cool conversation, so I thought it'd be very fun to share. Let's see who's on it. TJ from As Cities Burn, Stephen Keach, who used to be the singer of Haste the Day, is now their bass player. Aaron Lunsford's there. Devin from Emory's here. Toby is here. And I think that's about it. I think that's who's most mainly on the podcast. But here's a quick show note. In the middle of it, we start talking about some demos that people used to send into labels or people give to bands. There's some really bad demos that are kind of legendary and some people had, and we were talking about them. And I did find those, so you know what I'm talking about when you get there. And so I went ahead and put some clips from those two demos that I referenced in the episode at the very end. So stick around and listen to that at the end of the episode. All right, hope you guys enjoy this one. If you are in Florida this weekend, Miami, Tampa, and Jacksonville are still left. We're out on the road, and get those tickets at emorymusic.com. The show today is sponsored by Rockabilia. I've been doing that for a little while. That company is good. If you want to get some merch, if you want to get a t-shirt, a beanie, a poster, and it's not just band stuff, but that's what I think is the cool stuff they've had. This company's been around a long time, and they do almost everything on their website now. So go to rockabilia.com, pick out some officially licensed merch, get it. You'd be supporting the bands and a cool company and this podcast, and you can get 15% off if you use the promo code PCBreakItDown. Okay, here comes the episode.
Break it down, Dada.
Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down.
So let's start TJ. Oh, we got TJ and Aaron and Keach here, but let's talk about that basement show the other night, and more specifically, talk about doing that basement show like that to, which is like the smallest show you can play, to that big show we played Saturday night, like the biggest show you could play. So let's talk about that.
Well, you know, we just, you know, we gave it 110%. You know, no matter how many people were there, we just try to give it our all because, you know.
It's so which one did you like more, for real? Well, get that mic up, too.
Man, you never, the house show, you can never get better than a house show. I mean, on the way to the venue after the house show, going to Rocktown, Cody's riding with me. You pull up, there's a load in, all this thing, and Cody's just like, F this.
I saw really cool stuff. The thing about that house show is that and this sounds cocky, but I was like reading on Twitter and like people posting on Facebook, that house show it was insane, and people are like, that was legendary. Like, that show was insane, and we will always remember it. We will always remember when As Cities Burn played that 70s house in Nashville,
that's
Tennessee.
Crazy. Right.
And that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. As Cities Burn is legendary.
Do you take that seriously when somebody says that, or you just think they're silly?
It's like, kind of silly, but that show, I think if you were there, it'll always, and how old we are as a band, and it's announced that day. It's everything. Like, nobody knew that's there was the that show until that day.
I thought us announcing it at midnight, which is technically the same day, was too late.
Like, get up on TJ. You're up front, man. You get on the microphone.
I was worried that that was not enough time to get people there. But obviously, I was wrong.
Again.
Again.
Yeah, wrong again. No, it was fun. You see, I think the house show was more of our friends, but you saw like some of that come to life with people that we just have normal conversations with, like pushing me into the drums, saying the words.
What'd you do, tear the light down first thing, right off the ceiling?
Yeah.
Like in the first song?
I don't know if that was first thing. Of course, none of it's planned.
It may have been second, I think. It was second really thing.
Early. I had a lot to drink, too. I hadn't played a show in.
We were all.
I think that's what you.
Years.
That's what you do so at a house show.
I don't really get nervous before shows. More of anxious. So just like to pass the time, you kind of have a few drinks, and then it was like a bottle of whiskey was gone.
Yeah. Well, it was the environment was great because it was out. It was just a backyard party. I had Bridget there, and I was like, "This is what
fire.
This is what a party should be like." It was just people. Standing around, somebody dragged a bunch of wood up and started a fire with no, just all of a sudden. It was like a redneck party, totally. And it was like a bunch of people standing around the backyard, and then we all went inside and watched them play, and that was it. Like, and it was full, and it felt like a real show, but small, probably better. And I mean, I think probably people could enjoy it even more than the big.
A lot somebody of smiling, like you see just like people that didn't even really, maybe they didn't know our band, but they were just there. Right. But like every. Just seemed like everyone had just like a smile on their face. They're just like, wow, like we're so close to them.
Yeah.
And it's so loud. And like, you know, our band is energetic, I think. And I think that just kind of, I wouldn't say it like moves people, but whenever you get that many people in a room wanting the same thing, it's just kind of crazy.
I mean, people got saved.
Yeah. Yeah. We're
for sure.
This was funny for me is I was sitting on my, Shea Lounge, I guess that's what it's called.
Chase Lounge. Shea.
And I chose that over a Legendary show.
So we didn't get out of that.
Like, I was like, I'm not going to go see a Legendary show tonight.
I'll see them next week.
Maybe there'll be another one. There probably has to be, but I wouldn't even have gone. But like what y'all are saying is the house show, just because it's at a house, they got to see ACB at a house. The venue, the setting, made it that much better.
Yeah.
Because then you played a show in front of 1,000-something people.
Yeah.
Right.
And it wasn't Legendary, or it was. You know, can't. The bigger the show, it can't be Legendary. If you see Foo Fighters or YouTube or something at an arena, it's neat because the production
is impersonal,
but
you know?
It's not, it's like, Legendary.
It's not a personal interaction with the band or whatever.
You so know? You'd rather see your favorite band out on a bad PA in a basement with
100%.
90 people?
Definitely. If I could see Foo Fighters in the same basement, it would be Legendary.
It would be better.
Of course, I mean, it actually would be.
Well, I thought it was cool because there was no real money. I think it was like $5 or something, but there wasn't. Right. I mean, it was basically just a figure out how to do it kind of thing.
Right.
So no money exchange, and you can have a better show than... I mean, the show at the big show was just crazy. I mean, it was 1,000 people, and it was expensive tickets, and the venue cost... We spent $5,000 renting the venue to do the big show. Just on the venue alone.
TJ, after the show, was so drunk, he wanted to give all the money away.
The owner of the house show comes up to us, and we're like ready to settle up, and I'm just like, apparently the nicest guy whenever I drink, so let's just give it all to him, man. They deserve it. They're local bands. Like, and Aaron's like, I've got 3 kids.
How much was it?
Broken elbow. Like,
my wife fell off a porch and broke her arm. Shattered her arm.
$300. What, 150 people?
Would you stop him from giving it away?
No, I wasn't mad. I was just like, wait, what are we?
The look on his face was priceless.
Why would we do that?
TJ, why? What have you been thinking about? Like, what?
The funny thing was, and we didn't talk about it that night, but at one point we were going to give it all away, and we would have ended up having to pay our hired guitar player $100 to play that show. So not only we would have given all the money away, and
you brought your own beer, right? Everybody had a plastic bag out back with beer in it.
So bought beer, bought whiskey, and bought a guitar player.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I did redeem myself in the group text message the next day. I apologize for my
for your generosity. Did you also get in trouble for standing on the drums?
The owner of the drums, it was a nice drum set.
It was a very nice drum.
$4,000 kit.
You know, you're not thinking about those things in the moment. maybe 3 songs in, after that guy is just kind of cringing, like just seeing how heavy I am. He just politely came up to me and said, hey, man, could you stay off the drums? Which, you know, you got to respect it.
Yeah.
So we stayed off the drums.
Until the front row just pushed you into it.
Yeah,
yeah, like 10 times.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you hear me, TJ, at the beginning of the show? I said, because Zan told me, he's like, hey, will you make an announcement to everyone not to hang on the rafters?
Oh, no, I missed that.
And I was like, okay, everybody, don't hang on the rafters. They're not real. They won't support you.
And then TJ
hung on the rafters and he fell down.
Pulled a
light down. Yeah.
Hey, thanks to Cooper Collins, if you're listening, putting that back up together. He had a whole toolbox out there.
Yeah. That's the guy that built the fire.
Oh, yeah. That guy was cool. Handyman. Yeah.
He built the fire. Insane. He showed up right after we finished playing with power tools and fixed the whole lighting, whole thing that TJ ripped.
He built a small fire, and then somebody found a dry Christmas tree, which is the best treat in the world if you got a fire. Yes.
It is ironic, though, how you, like, as your band progresses, like, that's where you start out in house shows.
Yeah.
And then you look to go to to be able to play a Rocket Town for 1,100 kids with barricades, where you would think as a band, that you would potentially like the show where you ultimately began, is cool to go back to and revisit.
What'd y'all feel about the big show?
I thought it was great.
I mean, it was a great show. But
yeah. I mean, there's nothing bad about that. It's just,
no.
There is no but, really. It was a good show.
Well,
you
can't feel the intensity the same.
Right.
It's just different. It's a totally different experience.
Yeah. I don't like the stage being so big.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Like,
that's
I feel like I have to jog to around or else...
Entire time.
Yeah, you just feel like you have to move.
Bump into a single person in my band.
Barricades are just like a weird thing that go in my head where it's just like everybody seems so far away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I guess they're for safety. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand the barricade thing anyway. None of our fans were going to do something if the barricade wasn't there, right?
Well, you get the guy that gets on stage and puts his arm around you and sings two verses.
That might be better, though, on a giant stage or something like that, like a goofball or something. You just push him into the audience or something like that.
No, I've seen you get mad at that guy a million times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you're right. I have gotten mad at that guy, but I'm just saying the barricade doesn't – does it that stop that? For example – I saw people crowd surf, and then those Rocket Town security guards immediately come and shut them down. That does take away from the fun of the show.
Yeah, I think so.
I would rather the guy get on stage and me be mad and it be a more fun show than it be taken care of. Like, that's worse in a way, right? Because everybody goes, well, we can't do this. Like, people were asking me, we can't crowd surf or we can't do whatever. And isn't that what happened with Under Oath? Didn't Under Oath at that venue get in a fight with the security
guards? Yeah, I think that was the same thing.
It was a big...
Were you there? A big deal. I don't want to talk about it.
It's too much to even get into.
Were you there, Keach?
I was there.
Yeah, what happened? Just give me a download.
He said he doesn't want to talk about it.
He
works
there.
He doesn't
talk about it.
Oh.
He's got conflict of interest.
Oh, I see.
You want to talk about it?
I don't want to talk about it. We'll get in. It'll get too far deep into it. And then
Aaron and I, we disagree on a few things, not everything.
I'd love to hear
it. Well, let's just hear that.
Yeah, just it's fair.
Do it?
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay, sure. All right.
I'm not offended by how
you
got to
give your 30-second elevator pitch.
Yeah, let's all right, here's
give the setup
to
what happened. All I heard was the security guards were being dicks.
So there's Rocket Town employees, and then there's the hired, like, security guard, whatever, that Rocket Town hired.
Right.
They were being kind of dicks, you know, they're...
Most security guards were being
security guards, which usually they don't give a crap and they just kind of do whatever, unless they're exceptional security guards.
What were they doing to the crowd? Like pulling them down from crowd surfing or something?
Yeah,
or?
Some kids were getting kicked out for crowd surfing if it was like their third time crowd surfing or whatever.
They're maybe being a little bit rough.
Maybe a little rough.
The kids.
Right.
Like, you're supposed to be there to help, but yeah, go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
Like pulling
them
down.
The thing
a little
that
hard.
Triggered. Yeah. Under Oath, which I don't blame them because they didn't know the whole story.
Sure.
And I don't know, you're up there, you're heated, it's all like kind of your thing, and you see some type of what you think is injustice, and you like lash out, you know, you like stand up for the little people. What happened was there was a kid, he did something really, you know, terrible, like hit a girl or something.
Uh-huh.
And my buddy Gabe, he grabbed him.
Who is a Rocket Town employee.
He's a Rocket Town employee. He grabbed him and dragged him outside. Because you do that kind of crap, it's just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want that person in the show?
It wasn't crowd surfing that he grabbed him for.
Yeah, it was like, or maybe he did, maybe like punched a girl while he was like maybe you did the, I don't know, the thing where you run and jump and.
Let me see if I'm tracking. Aaron is pro abuse against
people. Right. Yeah. That was okay. We'll get his side in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get your side in a minute, Aaron, but you There's want women people. To be punched. Yeah. You're pro punching women. Aaron Lunsford.
So that was the, that seemed to be the, from what they saw, they just saw You're another person getting kicked out by a Rocketown employee.
Okay.
You know, this is crap. Let's, you know, whatever. So it all gets crazy, and that kid was just, you know, the dude.
Deserved to get kicked out.
He deserved to get kicked out.
Apparently. And then the, what did Under Oath do from stage? They called him out.
So they called out Gabe specifically. They, I mean, this part gets kind of cool, actually, because that's when they got, at the very end of the set, they got all the kids up on stage. Very dangerous thing to do, but it was also really punk.
They said the first 50 people on stage get
free merch or something like that.
Wow. Yeah.
It's they incited a full-on riot at Rocketown.
So they weren't chasing safety.
They were not chasing safety.
They were not chasing safety.
So, I mean, it is, like, on one hand, I think it's super cool because it is punk rock. We were talking about that the other day. On the other hand, it's super dangerous, and what if the stage collapses and a bunch of people get hurt? That's not really going to be an Under Oath.
It was a punk type of move to say, get up here, come get at us. You can get over these security guards if y'all all come at the same time.
I'm torn about that. That seems kind of cool. But I think that, I don't know. I think Rocketown gets a bad rap.
Yeah. And now, Aaron, your position is it's okay to punch women and endanger and start riots and collapse stages on a lot of people.
You want people to die at shows.
I mean, I was there too. I wrote a blog about it because I saw a lot of people complaining about Under Oath, saying how they're.
I didn't know you wrote a blog about it. That's
weird. I heard. See, I didn't know that that's why you wrote a blog about it. Because everyone that I read was complaining about Rocketown.
No, I saw people complain about Under Oath.
That's funny.
Saying how Under Oath were dicks to do it. And my view was that even though the thing that triggered it with Gabe, the security guards were being dicks all night.
Right.
They were being shitty. And so they did maybe see one thing that was justified, but it was a build up to all the other stuff. And it's being in a band and knowing how security guards are, and it's just stupid. And then also, a lot of bands have thoughts about venues like Rocketown, the way you kind of, they have a history kind of treating you like a kid.
There's no drinking.
Yeah.
There's no crowd surfing.
They used to make
we got in trouble for cussing on stage.
Yeah, they used to make you sign stuff saying what you would or wouldn't say. And then, but they like, well, it's, you know, it's a venue for kids, a skate park. And I'm like, there's no kids at this show. Right. Like, it's adults.
And you are paying for it. Like, we paid a shitload of money. Right.
We paid $5,000.
So that's the other side.
I guess, I don't know. Yes. That's not exact numbers. And don't quote me on that.
Yeah, that's my other side is that Under Oath, it is their show. And it should go how they want it to go, really.
Yeah, you rent the space.
Everybody's there for you.
Even though their deals are not set up like y'all's, probably. Still, you are paying for it.
Yeah.
Out of the tickets. So I thought it was awesome what Under Oath did. They were like, this is stupid. Everybody come up on stage and party. And if we never get to play this venue again, then fine.
Pardon the interruption, guys, but I got to take a second and tell you about our sponsor for the show today, ZipRecruiter. Now, there's something I feel very strongly about, and that is the people that you work with, the people that you work around, and that you create things with, they need to be the right people. There's nothing more important than those surrounding you. And they need to be competent, and you need to be able to trust them. You got to find the right people. It's kind of always been a challenge for businesses and anybody out there doing anything. It's always been a challenge finding and hiring the right people. And ZipRecruiter knew that there was a smarter way to do it. So they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies the people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. Now, these invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employees who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And it doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you'll never miss a great match. Now, right now, our listeners can get ZipRecruiter for free. You can try it for free. That's totally for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/breakitdown. That's ZipRecruiter.com/breakitdown. ZipRecruiter.com/breakitdown. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Well, this might give you a good idea of what you guys are talking about with Rocketown. I took a picture of the sign in the green room about the rules.
Yeah.
One of the rules is, so no profanity, or overall unsavory stage banter.
Unsavory stage banter.
Yeah.
Now, let me give you a little insight on that. Let me give you a little insight on that rule right there. I mean, you guys know I was doing. I was working there. I was doing sound for you guys when you were saying.
Yeah, when I said a bunch of bad words on stage. Well, one bad word.
He was saying unsavory stage banter.
Yeah.
What was the what happened that night?
I was talking about how Aaron Gillespie got in trouble for coming on Bad Christian Podcast and saying the word fuck, and then I alluded to him saying fuck over and over.
And he said fuck many times.
I said because Aaron Lunsford said fuck. Just because you say fuck means you can't get in trouble because he said fuck and I kept saying it over and over. Only Aaron saying Gillespie. It though is Aaron Gillespie. Yeah, yeah. I actually never said fuck.
He never said it. He was
yeah.
But there were families there that left.
There was I was at the soundboard and there was just this like family just kind of like you could tell the parents didn't really want to leave. But they had like a 5-year-old kid and maybe a 4-year-old kid or something.
Fucking kid.
And they're just like, kind of. It was just like the doo 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 doo.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like the
Arrested Development.
Arrested
yeah.
Development. Walk away. Sadly.
The whole thing is really sad. The under oath thing though is also a thing. Like, and I think we all know this. Christian venues and Christian festivals treat you shittier.
They do.
In general.
Yep.
It is more difficult to reason and work with them and have a good experience as opposed to playing Warped Tour or like you go play Warped Tour and everything is like just solid.
Respectful and smooth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of. Like,
if Rocket Town
had
a bar.
Well, you know
your own passes.
Yeah. If Rocket Town had a bar, the place would make 5 times what it did that night.
Yeah.
So it's a more profitable thing.
Yeah, yeah, but it you is can't strange. Have a, you can't have a bar at like okay, so they're registered like a YMCA,
right?
So like it's not necessarily a Christian organization. It's not necessarily, you know.
So they get some benefit, whatever. Financial benefit from that? Is that why they do that?
No, it's just like the way that they. I guess maybe I'm not sure. I don't.
Well,
know.
I mean,
I don't know all the politics.
It's like
but
a nonprofit,
insurance, and a liquor
yeah.
License,
so it's
non-profit.
Like a yeah, yeah. It's a okay. It's a youth center. So like. The stuff that you don't see, like from the shows and stuff, is that inner city kids come in.
Sure, yeah,
and like they feed them and
that's
they
fine.
Give them a place to go after school. So like that being their main purpose, it's like yeah, I don't know, but
it's complicated.
I can talk
well,
about
I will
it
say this:
I'll long.
Throw a wrench in it. I understand from their standpoint. Under oath doing that, and then they think liability or what does this mean? Yeah. It's breaking the rules. You do know when you play here, that's what it is.
It's not really a place for 5-year-olds, though.
I understand. Too, right? I do understand that, but at the same time, it does feel like a little bit of an old model because TJ's exactly right. They could make more money for the kids and everything if they sold alcohol. Yeah. You could do a lot more. And I went to a restaurant with my wife before the show, and there was 5 or 6 guys. They were like, "Hey, can we drink there? Do they serve alcohol? Sure, that would be so awesome." And they weren't drunk or wasted or anything. They just, but so
just it makes the show alone. Better too.
No, yeah. I mean, a show that big, 1,000 people, the bar is doing $10,000-$20,000 at least.
And
if not more,
it's proven that a place with a bar does well or fine.
Yeah.
But
so why not
but this
go
is
to like,
different? This
why
is
not
different.
Go to like Cannery?
I don't even know.
Well, no, you can't. I mean, maybe, you know how the business is. Maybe it was booked.
It was booked.
Like,
yeah,
you know, like.
True.
You would like to. But
I mean,
because,
I mean,
always.
I think you have the, there's the potential to make more money probably in. Tickets maybe at Rockettown.
Yeah, and it was good. I mean, I'm not knowing that place.
No,
so we played there a bunch
about,
of times.
Yeah.
They didn't kick us out for unsavory stage banter.
Yeah,
no,
nobody
they
ever. Yeah, no,
I mean,
nobody
they,
ever
I,
does
I
anything
said
about
fuck
that.
From stage a bunch of times, and they didn't even mention it to me.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's even a bad place.
I even
like
said
there.
Into the monitor, I said, "You're fine." I was like, "Yeah, go ahead."
Yeah, but you did it in that notorious sound guy on the talkback mic voice.
Yeah,
in the middle of a loud crowd, that sounds. I mean, you can't be me, something.
That's why Josh talks like that.
Your stage volume down, please.
Josh, yeah. I always wonder why Josh talked like that.
Yeah, quietly.
That's Josh's normal voice.
My
it's
normal
sound
voice.
Guy talk back mic.
Control.
No matter what design,
it doesn't
for
matter
you not
what's
to be able
stage,
to understand
Josh
it or
goes,
hear.
That's his volume. That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Okay, so what else were we talking about earlier? I thought would be good is the what not. What did you say? You want to write a book about what not to
how to be in a band?
How not?
Yeah. How to be in a band or what was
how
went
not,
for local?
How
bands.
To be in a band 101? Right. You know yeah. How to play a show without taking your cymbals down on the drums.
Yeah, what's the stuff that the, what is it? Because it's unbelievable when you get local bands, the situations you get into. And there's plenty of local. Every band's local until they're not. And some bands that are local are great and professional, wonderful. But sometimes there's some formula, maybe one in five or two out of four or whatever. Something in that neighborhood, you get local bands on a show and they just do something ridiculous and counterproductive and whatever. So what are some of those we can think of?
What was the story you're telling us today, Keish, about the band that showed up like at their time?
Yeah. So this band, I was running a show and
missteps to avoid if you're in a local band and get to open or play on a big show.
Yeah. We're like maybe 30 minutes before doors. They're the first band that's supposed to go on and they had just arrived. They're about an hour late.
Yeah.
And I'm ready for them to get their crap on stage so we can do a sound check and everything will be cool. And they show up and I was like, oh, hey, you must be this band. I can't remember what their name was. And they're like, yeah, yeah, cool. I was like, well, you're a little late. You can go ahead and get up on stage. And he goes, yeah, cool. We're just gonna eat first.
They're already out late.
He's like, yeah, that's totally cool. We're going to eat first, then we'll take care of business. Just like, get on stage.
Well, I'm trying to think whenever we were the local band, like when did we learn what was proper etiquette for being on a show of any kind of caliber? Like, whenever there's a tour with a tour manager, like they kind of tell you what to do. Like,
yeah. Until you're shamed.
I mean, the thing that's,
you got to get shamed
better.
Like, you know, when your set's done, most local bands don't know that the drums don't get broken down on the stage. You bring everything
you get off quick.
Yeah. That. Like, that's something that you'll just learn over time.
It's sense of urgency the quality.
Set
that you
times
want.
Entitlement. Are intended to make sure that the show goes for the specific time because the venue may close or maybe a curfew. Like, if you're supposed to play 20 minutes,
I mean, as tour manager Emery, that was like the thing that it would keep me up at night, like a local band, just not the lack of ability for them to not just start on time and finish on time.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, I would have to regulate it and I'd be on the side of the stage and they would start late, but for some reason they think, well, we still got to play all our songs.
Right.
And then whenever I'm like, they start late and then they get to the end of their set, they got 1 minute left and they go, all right, we got one more. And I have to yell at them, no you're done. We don't have one more. And then they go, oh, well, I guess we're getting cut off.
I don't get it.
I'm like, no, fuck you. You're not getting cut off.
Right.
Look at the time.
You had your time.
You had your time. I didn't make you start late. Fuck you.
Right. But honestly,
not me.
Aaron's not mad at all.
They would ever, just because they play that
one
song,
yeah,
that's going to be it.
That's it.
Right.
Also, all these other six songs that they played, I've never heard, and I didn't really hear it. I don't know.
Do you remember like when you're first starting out? I remember like we'd spend weeks trying to figure out what song we were gonna play first, how we were gonna come out. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like,
how you're gonna come out,
how you're gonna close the set. It was all very personal to you.
I don't know.
And
well, we didn't.
At least
that,
to me, it was.
I think, and I'm not saying we started out as a band as Cities Burn, like, before there was music out before, but we didn't see a lot of shows. Like we didn't know what all that stuff was. Like we kind of, you know, came up making up things as things were getting to a certain point. So we would have loved to play three songs before like anything else, just like get in and get out.
Oh, we played under our set time all the time.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we didn't make mistakes, but we were more aware of the fact that playing longer was not better.
Yeah.
And so we would always try to go under our set time and be super pleasant. And that did lead
bands, it's bad to play long.
Play shorter.
Of course it is. It's bad for the crowd. But it doesn't do you any favors. If you're a local band, you've probably got a couple of good songs.
Yeah.
If you show them all your songs, it's probably not going to help you. I mean,
play your four
or
five
best
songs. But
that led us getting a lot of good shows. All the good shows in Baton Rouge, we would always get because we'd...
Yeah.
Right.
And
like, they knew, they're a good band to throw on here, so...
You've never seen a band that you've never seen before and thought, I would just wish they would have played longer. That's never happened to you. If you get to see you know, Weezer play. You want them to play
if
longer.
If they did,
sure,
that's what you want. You want somebody to go, man, I wish they could.
Giant benefit.
That band was awesome.
That they wish you played longer. Exactly. Yeah. I remember one I did stupid one time. We were a local band. We were a local band in Seattle, and Norma Jean and the Agony Scene and X-Tol came through, and we got to play with them. And I just didn't. I lost the power cable to my amp. And so there was this giant line of backline stuff all the way through. And then our amps were in the front, and I didn't have the power supply. And we got to get on, we got to get off. And I was like, I don't know. And I just went back to the back and just found an amp back there and got the, just took the power cable from it. It was Scotty from Norma Jean's amp. But he didn't know me. He didn't know Emory at the time. We weren't signed nothing. And I just took it and just used it because it was the same power cable as my amp and played the whole set. And then when we got done and they were coming up there, like, he saw, like, I got it. I was going to take it back or something. Or he was, by the time I got up there, he was back at his amp looking like, what the fuck is my power cable? What and then he looks up, and the guy in the local band just has it. And I was bringing it back. He's like, sorry, I borrowed this, man. And he just looked at me like I was an idiot. Like, he just gave me a disgusted look. And then just, and I was like, okay. I just walked away and went straight to the green room and started eating food from there. So.
Our band never.
We just thought we're on the show, so there's catering. I guess that's ours too.
Our band never benefited from playing any of those shows ever. Like, there was a few times we played with like Norma Jean or Beloved or something before anybody really knew us, and like we're like, oh, we're stoked for like a month. We're like, we're playing with Norma Jean. Maybe they'll see us playing. They'll like think we're cool, and they'll get a sign to their label.
I'll tell you one example of
ever play like
why it worked for me. Begging to get on a show with Haste the Day.
How'd that work? Huh? You were in a band before Haste the Day.
Yeah. We begged to be on a show with Haste the Day.
Like, you showed up at the show? Or
no,
begged before, ahead of time?
No, we knew the production company, Soda Jerk.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah.
We just hit them up all the time. Hey, can we be on the Haste the Day show?
Yes. Yeah.
We want to be them. But it worked.
Because you
became the lead singer of Haste the Day.
I was waiting. It works for me.
Tell them why it worked.
Yeah. You know, it
does work.
They stole me.
Like the rock star.
So movie. Everything we've said before that point, throw it out the fucking window.
Yeah. Do
it actually works. Hey,
well,
play over your set time.
Think that,
get as much attention as you can.
Don't play over your set time. Don't do
don't
that.
Don't remind everyone to stick around for the headline.
The entitlement thing is the craziest one. What's the one? A couple tours ago where the people were telling us that their dad was a lawyer.
Right.
Oh, my. I know that punchline to the story. I don't remember what the story was.
Play or cut their set shorter or something.
Yeah.
And they, our dad's a lawyer. Y'all said y'all were going to be on this show.
Yeah,
and
I was the threat was that our dad is a lawyer.
They thought they were playing 30 minutes and they're actually playing only 20.
Right.
Before the show. It was just a miscommunication. Like, no, the set times were 20 minutes. They thought it was 30. And they're like, we planned 30 minutes and our dad's a lawyer.
Yeah, you tell that.
Holy shit.
They tell that to Reva or whoever. Like, Reva
it's
goes back
contract.
Out and they're like, well, they're mad about the set
their
time.
Dad
they
like,
said their dad's
contract.
A lawyer. It's a contract.
But they're contractually obligated to play 30 minutes. About?
What's a contract?
Like, it was just, who knows. But
somebody's
it's
phone
time,
call?
You think that would be something you would say?
Yeah, guess what? It changed.
It just goes
kidding?
To show you that you don't know anything at all. Yeah. You don't know anything.
Like, why would you think that would benefit you to...
Right.
What would be your gain to take a national touring band you get to play with and then have your father, the lawyer, enforce the fact that you get, by legal means,
so you
can
play,
you get to play
two
another
more
song
or something.
Like, that's going to benefit you.
You got time to
dumb.
Go to court?
Yeah.
Sound like rich kids, I guess, right?
Yeah.
They were.
Totally, yeah.
100%. It's just people that want to... And they're so unaware that it's just not going to work out because I would never play with that band again.
Yeah.
And in fact, because of bands like that, we stopped playing with locals.
So, yeah,
our band has decided it's so hard to play with locals that we don't even do it. We take out the full tour stuff. We have.
If we were headlining, I don't think we'd have locals on a headlining tour.
Just because they're so unaware and
it can be cool.
Yeah, they can be. Yes, and I love it if you actually see a cool band or they're
you
nice.
You can get in Haste the Day by being a local.
That's
you
true.
Can.
But for the most part, it seems like it's a little bit unaware of. Wait a minute, we're just.
Well,
we're on
see,
a good show.
Okay,
let's
so the
Felix Culpa.
A couple of songs, few songs, and let's
the greatest local band.
Show out.
The whole thing boils down. Yeah, there's tons of good experiences with it, but it all boils down to. The whole point of what makes it so frustrating is we're in an industry where you're a professional, and this would be true in any industry. If you're in an industry where you're doing stuff as a professional, and then 20% of the time you're doing legitimate, real stuff with people who are absolute amateurs. That's a weird. Right. It's always going to be a weird combination. Like it, you know what I mean? If you were that way with anything, it just gets weird when you take something that's a regular business that works fine, everybody knows what you're doing, and you bring, you know, a mixture of amateurs and professionals at the same time. It's always going to be crazy. It's always going to be goofy.
Right.
I think that's part of what makes it weird.
Yeah, it'd be like if congressmen and women had to deal with like high school or
student council.
Student councils. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Like, wait, what the? Yeah, what
exactly?
Like that's the equivalent.
Spill beer. We should at least mention that every local band that has a demo has been signed to a record label. One of the largest record labels, you know, out there with many. Like they have so many A&R people that work for them for no compensation. And this record label that if you don't know about them, they're called Roadside Records. And on the way here, when we're driving today, Toby's driving, said that at the time frame of 2003 to 2004, that at any point on any U.S. interstate, you could look over to the right and there would be a compact disc.
There would be a CD there. With green and red jewel cases.
Yeah.
And so what Blood happens Angel. As a local band when you make your
serenading
demo,
something
you give it to the headliner that you think is going to pass it on to their people, and it ends up getting tossed out the window
after you listen to it.
You definitely listen to it because you're trying to find the gem.
The local band, if you're a local band, you give your CD and you're wondering, I wonder if they're going to listen to it. Like they are,
they probably are,
and we hope it's really, really good or really, really bad.
Sometimes it can be really good, it's possible.
It's almost as good as if it's really bad.
It's kind of disappointing if it's
good. pretty good.
You want it to be bad. You really do. Yeah.
The worst,
those ones you kind of keep.
The worse, the better.
Yeah, well, in fact, there's these whole libraries that exist. If y'all ever, I don't know if y'all bumped into them, but there's these whole like libraries that of people that have saved demos, like, and it's just the funniest, worst music ever recorded. Like, and he's got hundreds of these songs. It's like, this is my favorite one. It's stuff that people send to Tooth and Nail on cassette. And
Dude, I'm not going to lie. Our demos you can sit there and listen to them. I have a copy of the demo that got
We did an episode last year where me and Matt Toby and Matt McDonald from Classic Crime, we all listened to
our
first demo. We listened to As Cities Burn demo and talked about it. I think we did Breath of Water.
I think our press kit and our touring and whatever we did was the only thing that helped us get them to look at us. I don't know.
Yeah, we
it definitely wasn't
so much.
The music.
But some of these demos and these times the people will send stuff to record labels and it's like a cassette of them talking about song ideas. Like, I've got this. Yeah, I promise you. There's one of them I just love. I'll try to find these sometime and share them. Well, I don't know if we could get it piped in the episode, but you have that same thing?
Yeah. I have like 45 tracks from Darren.
Okay, if you have some of these, I'll try to pipe them in.
I have a song about, now it would be about like angels.
Yeah.
And then he talks about the idea.
That
and then
he sings
come and save me, come and save, or something like that. And then he goes on to another idea.
Yeah.
Just like no music.
So it's like
just
commentary.
Commentary on a vocal idea.
He sends it to Tooth and Nail to get signed. It's like, so I got this other song. It's like, the devil is a bad guy and I think he'll be a good guy. You know, it'd be something like that. And then we'll go to the second verse. Good. But I hadn't written that yet. But you get the idea. Yeah. Like, he's like pitching the song.
You totally understand my vision for this.
Stuff like that. And there's another one that just I love so much. That, she sings the Bible verse that's it's this really pretty piano part. And she sings actual Bible verse that says, To live is Christ and to die is gain, kind of thing. So she sings that a couple of times, and then it goes the next part. So she goes to live is Christ and to die is gain. So she's internalized the lyric to be dying is a good thing. Then there's the break, and then the big chorus comes in, and she says, "So kill me, kill me, kill me, it's just amazing. It's just somebody sitting at a piano in their house with a tape recorder, and then they send this into the label. I'll try to find those two. I haven't listened to them in years, but if Josh has them, I'll try and put them on the end of the episode or insert them in here. But it's unbelievable.
The funny thing too is still getting bands' CDs and stuff like that. I don't even have a CD player anymore. You know what I mean? Like it's totally
Do you still get, I've been off the road for a little bit. Yeah. You still get
We'll
get download cards from time to time or web addresses.
People email ask us if their band can
play or
right.
open or.
But I mean, who have you given demos to? We gave one to Chris Caraba in a cafe. Yeah. We didn't even see wow. the show. We just saw him in a cafe in Seattle we gave in 2001. Ours. And we're like, oh, it's Chris Caraba.
He needs
went
a demo.
To the car, got the He'll demo. He'll love this. To him.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we gave ours to Haste today.
That's why we're signed.
The Beautiful Mistake was one of the bands that did, I think they liked our demo.
Oh, he was like, hey, we played with them. Remember, we opened for Emery and The Beautiful Mistake and okay. Anatomy of a Ghost.
That's right.
In which Virginia is now, Beach.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
We like hopped on that show.
You were a local band on a tour we did, but way before we knew who you were. That's right.
We were in Virginia, so we were on tour.
You were on tour.
Yeah.
I say local as if you were some shitty whatever. Not nothing. Unsigned, you were some unsigned shit band at the time. Good. Yeah.
But Josh.
Not on my radar.
Yeah, yeah. No, Josh from Beautiful Mistake, though, was really nice to us that night. Nobody in Emory was nice to us whatsoever. They're actually anti-nice to unsigned bands trying to make it.
Well, at that level, you are somewhat starting out, right? You're not willing to help. You're not trying to help out another band. You're like,
we're trying to do it. That was our
second tour. No, but it was doing good. It was like the show was packed. It was like a really good tour.
Yeah.
But
last of my worries right now is trying to help
out. Cody got broke up on that tour.
So when Cody got punched through the plate glass the window.
That was later.
Okay.
That was when we toured with Beautiful Mistake and Dead Poetic.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Cody like
and turn Scarlet.
Around.
Not Scarlet. What are they called? Spitfire. Yeah, Cody got punched through the glass.
Well, you can tell the story now. What happened?
Oh, we played and we were loading
same
out.
Venue,
Cody,
right?
We're in Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
Basically, the venue, the window.
The stage is at a window.
Yeah. The drummer's set up
like right by the glass.
Yeah. Facing the beach. Cody's outside looking in, and Spitfire, what's his name? Looked like Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, I don't know. The singer.
Anyway, he's going to do a punch at the window to kind of like at Cody's face just to joke around with him. Hand goes all the way through the glass, shatters
into Cody's face.
He gets glass in his eye.
No
have
way.
To like the whole show like shuts down. Cody and I jump in an ambulance and like go to the hospital, and they I guess take the glass out.
Nine your eyeball.
It was like here, kind of right.
Did
like,
the guy know that he did that?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, he came outside and was like, "Oh my god." Cody looked insane. Cody just had blood like going down his face, and he's like, "What?"
Yeah.
That's pretty cheap, by the way.
Yeah, that's fairly
that's
cheap.
Pretty good. Actually.
300 stitches, pretty good.
That was Bush's America. It was great.
Yeah, that was back in the
day. Back when you could afford health insurance. Yeah.
Have you guys ever done a house? We know we talked about that earlier, but the house show, like, have you done a house show tour, like a David Bazan kind of thing?
We've done living rooms, but that's not the same thing as house show. Like, living room shows are these,
that
like...
That would be kind of cool.
You know, you mean don't to do a like, just like aggressive, heavy? Loud, heavy living, like,
yeah, like
house show tour.
Out, like, make it...
After we did that show the other night, we were like, well, we should make just do
well, house well, okay, so let's just do the economics of it. You'd have to charge $50 a ticket. But it'd be worth it for us, as we were talking about at the beginning, to make it a legendary thing.
So you're saying
if you could see the biggest band, like Prince played in Seattle a while back, obviously.
What would be?
And he played a 1,000 cap room, and he could play around an arena. But he played a 1,000 cap room, and the tickets were like $100.
$250.
They were $250
bucks.
Yeah, $250, and he could sell them all, and he can create the intimate show, and that's $250,000. $250,000 is what it earns. So if you get the ticket price right. And it really is special. You could go around and play in living rooms and just bring a tiny PA and just you need a certain square footage and maybe bring a couple lights. So what would you if you make $5,000 if you sold 100 tickets?
How many
bucks.
People would be the minimum you that your house to qualify for being able to be the venue? What do you how many people do you have to fit in?
100 would be
100 people.
Nice. 100 at $50 is $5,000 total dollars. Wow. You can give the people that own the house $500 probably, right?
Yeah. There you go.
So you can do that. Like there's nothing stopping you from doing that. It's a good it's not if
that
you like doing
idea.
It, it's not
what
a bad idea.
You probably playing all shitty houses
legendary.
There, right?
You could call it the legendary tour.
Legendary tour.
Yeah, we are legendary.
We fucking legendary.
Yeah.
We're fucking back.
Yeah. But I mean there's nothing stopping you from doing that. You could sell 100 tickets at $50, I bet. Yeah. I think you could.
You get a t-shirt with it.
Have a green room in the third bedroom.
Yeah.
All the houses would be shitty. It'd be like just
three dudes that live together that don't. There's no.
Well,
art
there's good
on the walls
basements we played before.
Or anything.
I mean,
there's,
you probably there's find the place that does house shows.
Yeah,
in every
there's
city.
Probably
yeah.
one.
Yeah,
house
you're probably right.
You know the place in Nashville. There's
in
one in Grand Rapids.
City.
Is yeah, Grand Rapids, right? Yeah. Like that John's guy, house. The house yeah. we do in Grand Rapids is great. So I mean, it's definitely possible to do. Isn't it? I mean, that's what
it actually sounds kind of fun.
No, yeah, it does sound fun. No bands.
Just you. Just one.
Did you
band.
Have any lights yeah. at your house show or anything?
Yeah, so they did have good lights.
Yeah, there was a yeah. guy. Yeah, he brought a full-on light
if
show.
If you saw
it
a video, you'd be like, are they playing an arena?
They were turning.
It was
kind of like,
too
they
good.
Were like,
I was thinking fluorescent light, awkward show was what I was thinking yeah. about. But it was yeah. more like good lights in a yeah. basement. It was good.
Yeah. Would a band, would people pay, you're saying $50 for one band, would someone pay $100 for two bands?
Let's do it.
Caliber, Emery, and As Cities Burn. Would that, like, do you think people, 100 people would
we
pay
$100?
But even a $50 show at 100 people, $2,500 each is pretty good.
That's yeah, pretty not, good every night. Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth doing, yeah. especially
I want
fun.
To tour in this bus and then set up a like a... And,
listen, we do a comedy show after
Cornerstone Fest tent by the retaining pond at Walmart.
Yeah.
And we play a Cornerstone show in every Walmart
just
parking lot.
Just go to
lot.
The edge of the Walmart parking yeah. lot and let people circle around.
Yeah.
yeah.
No, plenty of parking lots bathrooms, anyway. Snacks, anything, yeah. Whatever you want.
If you could just not get run off, I mean, you'd get run off.
Right.
But if you could not get run off, that's such an easy idea to do.
I mean, I would love that. That's my dream. Job.
Emery ACB Haysaday House Show Tour. $200.
No, but you could between if you had you could definitely. I mean, we do acoustic shows where it's just if Toby and Devin and I go and we make sure we talk and hang out all night. That we do that at $50 and it yeah. works fine. And we do up to 100.
And people are happy to do it. They don't feel
yeah it work yeah, yeah. It totally works. So a full band $50 and you definitely need 100 sold if you can find places where you can be loud with 100.
Yeah,
people like finding the places where
seems
you can
like
do
basement
that
is the best,
yeah.
best thing. But
if you could find them, it could be definitely done at that price point, and maybe
is this
more.
Normal
two
on
bands
the podcast to like talk about business.
Well, like maybe that's why they I got like those it. Ideas cool. to do like the cruises
think?
Where you like you go on a cruise with the band you like.
Yeah,
didn't
yeah. Paramore does that.
Yeah,
look, the reason why this all works is because when we first started playing, everybody's still in the weird mindset. When we first started playing, we were doing. Like we were super poor. We were kids. We were things, you know, shows tickets were $5 or $6. All the people that come to the show were 17 and they had to borrow money to come to the show. You know, this is what we came out of is ultra cheap. We have no money. If you charge over $10 for a shirt, you're being greedy.
Yeah.
Like this is what it was like when we started. Okay. We're older. Our fans are older. Now they're software engineers. They can, you know what I mean? They have kids and houses and real jobs, so
they
lot of them.
They just want to go out.
And play, I mean, because we spent all show. Last year doing shows for $10 because we spent the year before that, we did a bunch of shows for $50. So, I mean, some people can't afford that, but you'd be shocked at how many people would pay $50, and that's not a big deal. And they get a sit or two and take an Uber and go buy drinks and still come pay $50 to see your show if it's going to be quality.
Cool enough.
Cool like enough.
You want to go spend $50 at Chili's or you want to go to this legendary yeah. thing over here?
I yeah. always legendary. Prefer a house show than a club show, to be honest. I don't care. Like, we're at a park behind a club right now. I don't care about going in there and being in there. I just yeah. don't care. Like, I like sitting in a bar. That's pretty fun. But if I'm going to play a show, I think a house show or a basement is more fun to me. It just is. I don't care because it's never that the sound's so amazing at these small bars that I'm the production and everything's so much better
yeah
and the local sound guy's so rad you luck up and get some that are good but for the most part it wouldn't have mattered if the sound was shit and there weren't any lights the show would have been legendary right y'all maybe. Show would have been legendary either way it wasn't
yeah.
that the
yeah.
any production or anything it was that it was small and unique and so I would always choose to
because when we started doing our bands we were playing in garages and basements so there's a sense yeah. in which that's kind of what it was designed for. And then, of course, you can put it on a big stage, but, like, it's weird. Like, I was telling them before when I saw Under Oath play with Bring Me the Horizon in the arena for 6,000 people, they were unbelievable. Like, they awesome. Totally killed that. And I was just thinking, if we were on the show, it would be so stupid.
Yeah,
it would
be dumb. So dumb.
It would just look so dumb. Okay, there's nothing I could do up on that big stage and do like that. But I love playing in the smaller, almost the smaller the better is kind of where I'm thinking now. That's just where I'm at. It's fun playing on the big stage. But
do you guys ever do like a generator stage at Cornerstone?
I don't think so.
No, we never.
But
did.
I've seen that some. I saw Blindside do that. And it was amazing.
Yeah,
so
we did.
About you do that.
We Haste the Day did like a like we were on the main stage, which we are not the band to be on the main stage.
Oh, that
it's
was
just
the
too
worst.
Big. Yeah, it's we way too big.
That we played. Right
we don't know how to terrible, do it. Right? Yeah,
when we played, it was right after you. Same,
yeah, that's
same
right.
Day.
It was that
terrible.
Same
day. Yeah.
That day we did a generator show, like generator stage show,
yeah,
like a couple hours before, and that was so much more fun and mm-hmm. so much more speed, so much easier to engage with the crowd, because that's what, like, at least, you know, rock and roll is engaging.
Yeah, my
with the
theory
crowd,
on that is something about the you if you go to a big place, even if it has the best PA, you're not hearing. Once you don't hear sound from the stage and you're only hearing it from mains, that's a big, big yeah. difference. So small clubs, you have raw stage sound and a sound system helping out.
Right.
But when you're in a place with a barricade and the set thing, it doesn't matter how nice the array system is or whatever, if you're not hearing any sound from a guitar cab or a drum hit, like, you know, when you hear a drum be hit, is something captured there that doesn't get captured and reproduced in a speaker.
Right.
When that isn't there, that's when it's really maybe it's too big. So yeah. You really want the sound. You want to have it to be a combination of the sound on stage
yeah.
and then some PA. That's like the best.
You want
you
it
get.
To do a little bit of ear damage, just a tiny just a bit, just yeah. a small amount. Yeah. Although that house show that we played the other night, my ears were ringing for 2 days after that. Anybody else? Were your ears ringing forever, or am I just
I have a bruise
old
on my
now?
Leg. That counts.
You have
I thought
a
I
huge
was gonna,
bruise.
That counts. I thought I was going to actually die while I was playing it.
Why? You were tired?
I was out wearing. I forgot to. Yeah, out of shape. Forgot to take off my hoodie and put on a t-shirt.
I keep looking at those pictures wondering why you were wearing that hoodie.
Because I couldn't get back through the crowd, and I was like, fuck it. I'll just play this show in this hoodie.
Do you
and
just then, wear a hoodie, no shirt
under it? Yeah, there's no shirt under it. That's what I'm saying. No shirt under it. And so, I mean,
you
I
can't
look,
go shirtless.
I look terrible. I thought there was a
he
moment
could,
where I was like, fuck it. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm married, and it'll shame my family if I take my shirt off.
I was standing with your wife.
But if I don't, I might die.
Your children would have been horrified.
You're gonna
die.
Have you ever? I do it sometimes. I've done this a couple of times where I hadn't paid attention on a cold winter tour and be dressed too warm or be wearing wool socks even freaks me out. But one time, it was cold on some winter tour, and for some reason, I was wearing long underwear under my clothes. Like thermals. Oh, and I thought, that's really cold. I got to load in, I got to load out. I was wearing thermal, long underwear under my jeans and played the show. And it was, I thought I was going to die.
I like the heat. You
know, sounds horrible.
Some of y'all remember this, but I hurt my neck really badly on that one tour really early on. We were with Alexis on Fire and Silverstein or whatever, something popped in my neck and I couldn't move. We did not take me to the hospital, and I laid in the back of our van for 3 days, not moving. And then after that, the doctor said, your neck, it'll probably get better or something. Here's a bunch of Percocet. So for probably 3 months, I would take a Percocet before the show, drink a shitload of beer, and then wear a heavy winter jacket the entire show. And the heat made my neck feel better. And so I did that for 3 months, and now I heard that that's bad.
That hurts.
I didn't know it was bad then. Drinking alcohol and doing Percocet.
Okay. I heard that causes cancer.
Yeah, that could maybe kill you.
I did it for at least 3 months. Like, I would go, okay, here's my Percocet, and I would drink a shitload of beer. And nothing would happen. I thought, I'd feel real woozy and crazy. Nothing even happened.
I mean, it's like Tylenol, you know? You're not supposed to drink
it. I thought I should take 2 Percocets.
Without him. Listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.